Over the last, well, couple months, FX, was it FX, I think?
Yes, it is.
Did another season of their...
I think it's Fox, actually.
Is it Fox?
Yeah, the main Fox.
It's one of the... It's one
either
of the,
way, it's a
has an F
people.
And an X in
right.
its name. Yeah. Okay.
Could be FXX. I don't know. There's a bunch of different ones under their banner, but they did the O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story, O.J.
Yes,
People versus O.J.
Simpson.
Yes,
by Ryan Murphy, same guy who does American Horror Story.
Which was fine. It was very watchable. It was interesting.
All-star cast.
Interesting cast.
Interesting casting.
Very strange
casting. Jr. was a little interesting choice
yeah.
for O.J. That
there
was...
could have been a lot of people to play O.J.
And that Friends
yeah.
guy.
Schwimmer yeah. as Shapiro.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my favorite was, what's his name? Travolta.
Oh, Travolta.
Oh, Travolta was the strangest.
He looked like Battlefield Earth Travolta. Did you kill him?
He probably thinks that's a huge compliment,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, because that's a tribute to his religion.
To
right?
Hubbard,
oh,
right.
Yeah.
It was a weird... It was fine. It was... You could tell they had, you know, really kind of dramatized it. But it was actually... I mean, the way that they made it, it was cool and it was watchable. When we found out they were doing season two, and they announced that they were going to be doing the murder of Gianni Versace, I remember thinking, like, this got to be, like, two episodes. There was no story to this. He killed Gianni Versace, yeah. And there was, like, it was, like, 5 days later, the whole thing was over. And then, you know, so we started watching it, and it hooked us in. You and I watched it. Did you ever get a chance
no,
to watch the Versace
Which
series?
Which is a tragedy, because I am a giant Ryan Murphy fan, so I should
have you know, it was...
I will watch it. I'm also a Versace fan, and it was not endorsed at all by the Versace family.
No,
they were very against it.
Yeah,
I can
sure
see how
were.
It wouldn't. Nobody involved would probably endorse the juicy details. But it was based off memoirs and interviews with people and stuff like that. And they certainly had to fill in some blanks, because there was a lot to this story that I didn't know. There was a lot to the killer, Andrew Cunanan, he was totally girly.
Not saying it nicely.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Daddy issues for days.
Everything. I mean, every disorder we've talked about on this show, from narcissistic personality yep. disorder to psychopathy to everything, he had it.
Totally.
Yeah. He's like the Heinz 57 of psychopaths.
Seriously, he is.
Dr. Pepper. He's got 23 flavors of crazy, man. He's fucking crazy.
Paging Dr. Pepper. Dr. Pepper. here's the thing. Is Cunanan... didn't just kill Gianni Versace, killed a few people. And if you watch the show, it really was interesting, because it kind of started at Versace, because clearly that was what broke the story. But then it would introduce these other characters, and it would kind of play almost backwards. And it was really, really fascinating, because unlike a lot of killers, there's no, as far as I could find, footage of Andrew Cunanan talking. Like, no interviews, because why would there be?
The 90s, too.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, not everybody had video
phones,
cameras and
yeah,
cell phones.
And recording things.
He died before he was able to talk. He didn't live in Manifesto. So watching, what is the actor's name? I don't know what the actor's name is
who
that played
him?
Cunanan. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
But watching him playing Cunanan was interesting, because you're like, how much of this was this character?
Right.
And a lot of that, the show was that. Because we know who OJ is. We know who Robert Kardashian is. We know
oh,
who
yeah,
all those
we
people are.
All
we watched
them
all
play
that.
Out. Mm-hmm.
Right. But this was a lot of those things where, like, him and the victims and all of that. I mean, aside from Gianni Versace, who was, like, the casting for him, by the way, dead fucking on.
Phenomenal.
Dead fucking on. But, you know, so they kind of... you kind of have to figure that they filled in some of the holes in this story. So
yeah.
What we're going to do today is we're going to go through the story of Andrew Cunanan, which involves all of the victims that he murdered. And then we'll kind of talk about both the facts of the story and the show and the parts of it that, you know, it might have.
Yeah, I will say that the actor, and if Melissa's probably going to find the name for us here, but he does a fantastic job of being so despicable. I mean, honestly, he creeps me out. Like, he's like, I don't know him, but it's like, I don't want to know this dude. And if
yeah.
I did know him, I'd want to fight this dude.
Yeah.
You know, but he's...
sunk himself completely into the role. I mean,
yeah.
this is one of those things where, like, if you're playing a serial killer in a movie or whatever... you know, that's something. That's being this person for a certain amount of time on screen. This dude was this guy for hours and hours of screen time, which means even months of filming. And it would have been crazy to get into that headspace and be there, because everything this dude did was a lie.
He totally faked his own life.
To the point where I think he was truly lying to himself.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, and believed it. Yeah, exactly. I'm very delusional.
Yeah.
Delusional kind of, to a terrifying downfall. I mean, I guess the word is psychopath, really. I mean, because it wasn't just a focus on the murders. It was what kind of person that it took to do the things that he did.
That's
and the lead up into his life. And he is, I mean, just his social interactions and the things that he does are just mind-blowing acts of human behavior, really. But
he created a whole other name for himself other than Cunanan.
Yes.
He was DeSalva or whatever.
And believe that identity. It's
well, and I think, you know, it stems, and when in the way that the show played out, it played back to his childhood. And a lot of this, again, we're going to assume that they had interviews or stories or recollections of this kind of stuff. There is some stuff that is public record. But again, a lot of the time while this stuff was playing out, nobody thought to document all of the little tying together strings. So you kind of assume that A and B meant C, but you know, a lot of this story had to be filled in afterwards.
Yeah. And I mean, if you're a victim and if the victim and the killer is dead, you know what I mean? Then it's really hard to ever know what truly went on between either of them.
And that's the other thing about Cunanan, and we'll talk about the details of this, but all of his killings, as most killings are, but I mean, sometimes something will happen and they'll leave behind somebody else or they'll be a witness or whatever. Everything that he did was just him and the person. There was no traces of you know, any chance of witnesses, any chance of anything seeing it, any chance of recording equipment or anything really containing the last minutes of what happened. And a lot of this has been speculated. So,
Darren Criss is the
name
of the actor.
Darren Criss.
Just so you guys know, he was in Glee.
Oh. Hmm.
Another Ryan Murphy show.
I wonder if there's anything about how he feels about playing that role, like what it took. Because, I mean, it is a crazy mind place that you have to get to.
Yeah. No, I can't imagine. You know, I think a lot of actors, and we've talked about a few, you know, they have to find really dark places. Heath Ledger is one of the first ones that popped into mind. He got to such a dark place, or had to get there and prepare for it in such a way that it sunk him mentally.
Yeah, that's a sad example.
It is, but
I hope it's not that extreme.
You know, no, I don't think so. I mean, people like Charlize Theron have gotten...
He was one of my favorites.
Charlize Theron played Eileen Wuornos and won an Oscar, and I mean, she gave her all to that role. I mean, a lot of people right now, as a matter of fact, later this year, I think they've either wrapped filming or they're currently filming, but Zac Efron is playing Ted Bundy.
Ted Bundy, yes.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for that.
And they've shown some pictures of him on set as Ted Bundy, and he looks good. Yep. Terrifying. Got the hair, got the face, the eyes. It'll be interesting to see how it plays when he actually plays.
Got a grill in his basement.
His shed.
He's really taking this role very seriously.
It was. Didn't he have a bug?
Yeah, he did. I had a bug that looked just like him. Just like it.
Did you?
Pale yellow color. And my mom actually knew Ted Bundy.
What?
Wait, your mom knew Ted Bundy?
Yeah, he was a security guard.
How are we 80 episodes into this podcast?
He was a security guard at the dance building at the University of Utah. How perfect is that for a serial killer who preys on, like, young
women?
He was a security guard. And when, you know, word was out about him and stuff, the dancers would have him walk them to their car.
Oh, my gosh. Because
he's the security guard.
But he probably didn't kill anybody there because you don't show where you eat.
Yeah, because it's pretty
easy. That's your car.
But I thought it was cool that she knew him. And then my first car was a yellow bug, just like his, like, same color yellow.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, well, but yeah, no, that's crazy. We've mentioned it before, but
it's just creepy that he was a security guard for a dance building in a college filled with girls.
And I think you were going to talk about our neighbor, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, we've mentioned it before, but our neighbor, her daughter was one of Ted Bundy's victims.
Oh, that's so sad.
God. I think her name was Leslie Smith, but her the last name is Smith. Uh-huh. So, but yeah, she just liked her husband Fred was showing us his geodes that he makes in his garage, and we came in and she told us that story. And it was really kind of crazy to watch her tell that story and think back about that. You know, it was. I don't know.
It's crazy to think. I mean, it's tragic when anybody loses a loved one. Obviously, it's super tragic when it is the victim of a crime. But when you are tied to the name and a legacy of someone that, you know, is notorious for being evil, like you never get to think of your daughter without thinking of Ted Bundy.
Yeah, that's so sad.
Or whoever, or your Jeffrey Dahmer, or whoever it was that killed, you know, this horrible serial killer. Andrew Cunanan, perfect example. You know, you have all these people who, for the longest time, Versace, that name was, synonymous with tragedy, with murder, with what had happened before kind of Donatella took over the company and almost reinvented it. But it's interesting. And like we were talking about, I think it can be tied back to literally this kid was groomed to believe he was greater than, not that he, well, than he was, I guess. I mean, I don't know any other way to say it, but like his father, based on accounts and the show, seemed to raise him with almost like this false sense of
entitlement.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's
a
perfect example.
Mm-hmm. You know, he really
raised the entitlement.
I don't know. And if, like you're saying, I don't know how true to real life this portrayal of him is, but it's really interesting. His parenting skills are, I don't know, they're not.
Well, he left his family. He was from the Philippines, and he just decided, oh, bye, see ya, and went back.
Modesto, his father, Modesto Pete Cunanan, and he had people call him Pete. He was a Navy veteran. He basically raised, from all accounts, Andrew, like you said, to be this prince, enrolled him in the finest schools and taught him to be, you know, kind, and taught him etiquette, and taught him social interaction, and taught him all of this stuff. All while his father was doing his father essentially did the same thing, passed himself off as something he wasn't, passed himself off as a man who understood stocks and trading and all of this, and ended up embezzling money, selling false stocks, and in order to not get prosecuted, he comes home, gets all his money, gets his passport, and flees the country and leaves his family with nothing.
So crazy.
Yeah, and the show portrays it like he had it ready, you know, kind of under the floorboards, like he already had an escape plan.
Escape plan from his family.
Yes, he had a bag packed, money ready, but not for them. Like, he wasn't going to, he was going to let the house, you know, be repossessed and all that kind of stuff. And I really think that it was a case of like you're saying, Modesto believed these lies himself, and I feel like he was vicariously passing along this.
Got to be inherited.
This, I mean, and a learned.
Yeah. I don't know if it's nature or nurture. But
I think
it's probably
both.
Yeah.
I think both. He's got the crazy genes in him, and, you know, and he's got the crazy teacher bringing out those crazy genes. But I think it was just a matter of him vicariously living that out through his son. And even if, you know, Modesto didn't believe that he himself was as great as he was, I think he was grooming his son to be great, be the man that he wished he could be. And then suddenly that was kind of what Andrew became. Just really,
I mean, he really did become the man that his father showed him he should be.
Yep.
A liar. It's sad. Andrew showed signs of becoming this disturbed individual. And when you take an individual like this who already seems to have these tendencies, meaning that as a teenager, there are reports that he had developed a reputation as being a prolific liar and telling these fantastic tales about his family and his personal life and who they were and what they were and what they owned. I mean, this was stuff that he eventually used in his older years to, you know, to meet men and work himself into these higher circles, but he was developing this technique in high school where, you know, as a lot of killers are, people look back and go, you know, Dahmer was weird.
Oh, yeah. Didn't he have older boyfriends in high school and, like, that would buy him presents and stuff?
That sounds like him.
But yeah, that would mean he was learning all that, mm-hmm. like manipulation mm-hmm. And profit and gain.
He was only 19 when his father took off. I mean, he was just out of high school.
Oh, wow.
19, his father takes off. Later that year was the year that Andrew's mother learned that he was gay. His father denied it from all accounts. He always said that he maybe didn't believe it or whatever. But Andrew not only showed this tendency for lying, but he also showed a tendency for violence, because at one point during an argument with his mother, he threw her against a wall, which actually fractured her shoulder blade.
Oh, Jesus.
And then didn't she lie to the police about what had happened to her, of
mm-hmm.
course?
She fell. Him? Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, later examinations of his behavior show that he may have suffered from antisocial personality disorder, which is typically characterized by a lack of empathy, which, I mean...
He definitely had a lack of empathy.
Didn't they even say that he kind of illustrated those traits when he was younger, mm-hmm. a young child, lack of empathy for things?
Yeah, just, I mean, I think this kid just... I mean, it's like somebody...
No wonder he became the person he did. You have a sociopath who's being told they're amazing.
Right.
That is dangerous.
It's like if Dexter had gotten, like, you know...
More coddled.
Yeah.
More coddled.
Good kill, Dexter.
And a Rolls Royce. Yeah. I mean, he's...
I'm
going to buy you only the finest stabbing knives.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I mean, it really is. And that's the thing, is that, you know, you look back and it's only, I mean, you can't fault a father for wanting to give his son this amazing life and raise him to be this. Like you said, raise him almost to be the man that he wasn't. But then you set a terrible example and become, I mean, how do you know that your son's going to grow up and do this? You don't.
There's a part in the show that they illustrate his dad. Andrew is accepted into a really high profile school, and his dad wants to celebrate that, and so he buys him a really expensive car. And I think mm-hmm. he's like 12 at the time or something.
Oh my God,
like that.
He can't even drive.
I don't know if it's true. I mean, I don't know if that fact
part
is
of
true.
The elaborate story of it.
Right. But if it is, and if that's
but
what
he
happened,
would do something like that.
It does sound like it, yeah.
And wasn't he like the fourth in his family anyway?
Yeah,
like,
he had
what about the other
older
three
siblings?
Kids?
Yeah, and they didn't have a car. And so, like I said, I don't know how
Why
much
are
of
you
that
spoiling
is
spoiling this one.
But it's that's just not, I mean, in my opinion, I wouldn't want to give my 12-year-old a really nice car.
Oh no, they can't drive. What's the point?
Yeah.
It seems absurd. But I mean, this is coming from a man who ultimately deserted his family and was lying to them the entire time.
Yeah, he wasn't thinking on a
I mean, he
clear
was
level
the
anyway.
he bought that car with embezzled money earned falsely from ruining people's lives and selling them fake stocks.
Oh man.
If this happened.
If that happened.
I guess we need to find that out, right?
But even so, he moved his family into a nicer house. He paid their rent,
away.
He bought their food. He did it all with lies and money that it wasn't his. Cunanan, you know, they kind of show in the show that he kicked around for a while, kind of became not really an escort, but started hanging or looking for sugar daddies.
In real
daddies.
Life, yes. That is very true in the real story.
Yeah.
I mean.
And kind of, was that the same point in his life where he kind of had become a drug addict, or he was heavy into, was it heroin or meth? I don't know, something. But
he had started off young, getting a lot of attention. I mean, he was hanging out with these, you know, older men who were lavishing him with gifts and money or whatever. But yeah, coming up to the murder spree, which took place in 1997, he had really gotten into partying, really gotten into drugs. I mean, to the point where he had, like, gained weight, he'd lost his, you know, his looks. He looked like a drug addict.
Right.
And so some people speculate that it was because of this dip in attention. It was because, you know, now people weren't finding him as attractive, finding him as appealing, that maybe that could have pushed him even further, because now here's this kid who spent his whole life being this narcissistic psychopath, and now nobody's feeding his narcissism.
It seems like in the real story, when he's in San Diego, he's actually doing well with like being a kept man and mm-hmm. you know, finding these older men to support him, and even the drug habit and stuff isn't yeah. that bad. But then when he decides to leave San Diego, it seems like that's when his life just spirals out of control, because he tells all his friends he's moving to San Francisco, but never actually goes. He really goes to Minneapolis.
Well, and in the story, they play it out as this in his. So, yes, he had, and I think maybe that's exactly what they did in this story, because in this, he has this rich older man.
I was going to ask if San Diego was the older boyfriend.
Like, I'm going to turn this house into the biggest party house in all of.
I guess that guy, right, had lived in another place, and Andrew had convinced him to buy a much bigger and more
lavish
expensive
mansion.
Home, right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes, I believe so. And that's how the show played it out.
Yeah, I was going to say, they don't cover that
because
I
think that they have to.
Dateline special.
Yeah, no, they don't. There's a lot of holes and threads that I feel like they had to fill in. So I think, yeah. But within the course of the FX show, you're right. They had this older boyfriend that he'd met, I think at like an opera or something. They played it in the show as he had gone to this show by himself and caught the attention of this older man and was like, oh, my father's a, you know, a this, and my mother's an Italian this, princess of a. And he does his whole thing and ends up kind of getting in with these older gay men that he promises, look, I'm going to tie you into the biggest, coolest parties and scene here in the town. And they, buy this house. It's around that time that he starts, or he meets the guys who would ultimately be his demise, which is David Madsen and Jeff Trail. Both, I don't know, in the show they kind of played him as both kind of still closeted, not really open to their families.
The older one, Jeff, definitely was.
Yeah, and given the time
that
it was, back in the 90s, it wasn't, I mean, we're certainly not where we are today with acceptance.
Right.
But yes, I think a lot of that also had to do with the gentleman's background. I think that David was from a small town, kind of a conservative place, and same thing with Jeff. He was in the Marines or the military?
The Navy, I think.
The Navy, was certainly a kind of an issue back then.
And
but
in the show, I mean, they actually play it out where it's like, they really hammer home how anti-gay the military was. Like, he comes down and they're beating up a dude, and he's like, "Hey, why are you beating him up?" Because he's queer, you know. And you're like, "Whoa!"
Oh,
it was almost to a point where like it was cartoonish in its portrayal of how anti-gay people were. But then, because now you go, well, it's just so accepted, and it was.
Yeah,
but
you can't
think
about
when
how
you really
it was
do
then.
Think back to the '90s, like, and you. Remember, like, people were pulling out their sponsorship of Ellen's sitcom because she was going to tell the world she was gay, and not supporting a gay show.
Totally.
And now it's like, you guys, 90% of the shows on TV are gay. Like, every show now is, like.
And Snickers sponsors it.
Yeah, and it doesn't, but you really do. You think back, and there was a time, and they do touch this throughout the entire series. They talk about this with not only, David and Jeff. But they also talk about this with Johnny Versace, who was not openly about it at that point.
That's why he wanted to make this series, was because of the social tension with homophobia in the 90s during that time. And I mean, just to love on Versace for a while, he was such a groundbreaking artist. Mm-hmm. And I just love artists that are fearless, and I hate that this is how he died.
Yeah.
Because he even came out and said that he thought America was safer than Italy, where he was from. And it's just like, and then he gets murdered on his own porch, you know? It's like, America just has this horrible, like, reputation. If somebody gives it a compliment, it's like, hold my beer!
Yes.
I'm gonna just totally blow that out of the water. But he really loved it here, and he loved it everywhere, and he was so loved all across the world, and he was so important for his time because the 80s was when the AIDS scare was like giant. Mm-hmm. So homophobia, I mean, it already wasn't doing that well. People were very judgy already, but that just blew up like crazy. And not just homophobia, people were afraid of sex too.
Yeah.
And Versace helped like bring sexy back. And he was open. And he was in a monogamous relationship, you know? So people knew he was a homosexual. People started to accept it a little bit more. Like, he was just such an important figure for the 90s. And then he just gets murdered by this nobody who's just on a killing spree and outrunning the police around every corner. And I hate to say it, and I think a lot of people agree with it, though. It feels like the victims, they pinned him so much as being gay, there wasn't enough put into tracking these murders.
Yeah. Exactly.
And it's
they do play that.
Yes.
It's totally disgusting.
We've talked about that before. There's the story of the man who ran away from Jeffrey Dahmer naked and covered in blood, got chased down the street.
Yep. And they took him back.
And they said, you two go back and just work this out.
Well, I think because Dahmer caught up to them, right?
Yeah.
And was like, oh, it's no big deal. It's just a lover's quarrel. Yeah. Like, we're just...
This guy... And then he murdered him.
Yeah.
Because, you know... We always, and we've talked about this before, you know, what if historical crimes were unsolved because people didn't look at women or children that we now know are capable of crimes?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, just...
Like Jack the Ripper. They might have think it was...
Jill the Ripper.
Right.
Right? Nobody thinks that children can kill or that, but then, I mean, there's stories.
Burke Ramsey, I know you did it.
What about that? There's that infamous picture where the kids holding the little kid's hand, leading him out of the mall.
Oh, that, I don't, it's a surveillance video. I hate that one.
And it's like these 2 8-year-old kids just kidnapped, walked a 3-year-old or 4-year-old kid out of a mall, and they both went off and killed. They were young. They're 8 years old or 9 or whatever the fuck they were. And it's, you know, you don't think about that. And when it came to the gay community, you're right. In the 80s, the end of the 90s, you didn't, you know, it was still stereotypes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was still so, you know, over the top with the way that people thought of it. And the AIDS scare, you're talking about that. I remember growing up in the 80s, every sitcom did an AIDS episode.
Oh, yeah. Like a very special episode.
Where, like, the kid would come home like, can I use the toilet at school now? Can I get it from a swimming pool? Like, it was crazy what people thought.
Yeah.
Going into this, you know, trying to find Cunanan, which should have been fucking easy because he was...
Oh my God, he left clues everywhere. Everywhere.
I mean, it was just so dumb. But people didn't think about it because you're right. It was just this... Well, they, you know...
I think that it was also a matter of subhuman rights at that time, where it was like they didn't deserve justice because, oh, it's, you know, and I feel bad saying this, but they might have thought, oh, it's just a gay dude, you know, he doesn't, just, you know, that.
No, it's totally true. I mean, we're going through it now, even.
Oh, yeah.
With different races.
Absolutely. Like, it's always existed.
It's like,
I
these
mean,
crimes happen. It's like, well, who was the victim? Okay, now we know how to handle it.
Yeah.
Like, was no, it a, was it's still it,
oh,
a victim.
It's just another hooker.
Yeah,
just another,
like,
homeless druggie.
Victim.
No, yeah, look, yeah, they're still human beings. And I think that's kind of what this show did, was that, fictional or not, the accounts and the way that they played these guys showed that they were, or at least what might have gone on in their lives, not being accepted by their parents, not being accepted by the military. And when they meet Andrew, here's this ball of openly gay energy, right? Now, again, I've seen pictures of Andrew Cunanan, the mug shots, the shots, the pictures of him that I've seen. And it is weird to me to look at that face, his actual face, and imagine him as the way Darren Criss played him. He doesn't seem flamboyant and open, you know.
Yeah.
The way he would sit, carry himself in any of the pictures I've seen don't play that way. So I can only imagine, just based on people being around him, that that's how he was. But, you know, he comes in and he's just this confident person, fake confidence,
yeah,
false
I was gonna
confidence.
Say, if you're a liar, you got to be confident.
Right.
So that's just
so, I mean,
part of it.
People who have awesome stories to tell, they're either humble and they don't tell them, or they're douchebags and they you know, and they're just constant. So for him, he was this guy who had he practiced all the lines. He knew the stories. He told them 100, you know, for 10 years, hundreds of times. So he just knew what to say to impress these guys who were less confident about who they were at that time in their life than him.
There was an interesting comment that was in the show as well, and that's kind of all I'm going off of right now. But in like a scene where they're at a party, maybe like in high school, it shows that he's there and he kind of hits it off with this girl, you know, and not like in a sexual way. It's more like, oh my gosh, girlfriend, like that kind of way,
yeah,
you know.
Cute.
And they kind of show that connection. And there's also a scene where, you know, Andrew says something like, well, you know, I'm gay. And she says, Andrew, I don't really think you're gay. I think you're just whatever you need to be at the moment. And I think there's like a little bit of
manipulator. Yeah,
yeah, I think there's totally a little bit of truth to that. Mm-hmm. Even maybe more than a little bit, in the sense that if you watch Andrew's pattern, it's very much going after successful men who truly are the things that Andrew wishes he could be. They are truly successful. They do have things to back it up. And I think a lot of it came from him targeting those men who had the things he wanted and he knew he couldn't achieve. And so it was like, you know, if I can't have it, you can't have it either.
Yeah, he picked his victims.
Absolutely. And very much from the place within him that was bothering him, I guess you could say, you know?
Yeah.
Or lacking.
Well, that's the thing. Like the one older man that was really, really good to him, and then the boyfriend who I think actually did really love him. Those are the two that moved to Minneapolis, and that's why he went after them there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in San Diego. Oh. I mean, I don't know why they both moved to Minneapolis. I don't think there was any kind of connection between those guys, but they just...
Are you talking about between Jeff and David Madsen? Mm-hmm. Well, in the show, they played it as they all knew each other. As a matter of fact, there's a scene in the show, and again, I don't know how much of this really happens, because you're like, what? They got all the Avengers together for one scene. But there's a show where he's throwing this lavish party at his big party mansion, and he's inviting his new boyfriend. And then, so like, Jeff is there, and then David's there, and then Lee Miglin, his other victim, shows up and goes, Andrew, do you remember me? Lee Miglin. It's like,
oh,
whoa, all the, everybody in the same place.
Yeah.
Where's Versace? Yeah. Like it's kind of, they play it that they knew each other. They play that David Madsen and Jeff Trail knew each other.
Okay.
And that they actually imply that there was something between them in the show, whether or not
yes.
that was real.
Which I could see.
It could be.
As
it
the motivation
happened,
for what follows, and especially if that's the way that it was. But it kind of plays it that, excuse me, that Jeff does, okay, that Andrew met Jeff in like a gay bar or something like that and could tell that it was like his first time or that he was out of place and that he kind of befriends him. And then he kind of meets David and kind of does the same thing. And I think he really wanted something between him and David wasn't feeling it. Because in the show, it shows David, who again was from a small town and had that kind of lifestyle. I think he really saw through a lot of Andrew's bullshit, and he would ask him, you know, be real with me.
Yeah.
Tell me something real, you know? And he just wasn't going for it. And so then Jeff and David meet, and they kind of insinuate that maybe something was going on there. And Andrew was probably extremely jealous because he wanted David.
Love triangle.
And that's, you can't reject a narcissist,
you
know?
Yeah,
especially
not
a psychopathic narcissist. But, I don't know. There's some interesting stuff. And I guess Jeff really didn't like him and had a problem with him. And they kind of insinuate that it was because Andrew had intentionally outed him through a postcard that he sent to his parents.
Oh.
And they insinuate that Andrew did
what
it on purpose
twist.
To get back at him, you know, and so that would make Jeff pretty angry. I can understand that.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
So he was already showing those signs of crazy manipulation and a crazy girlfriend stuff.
So let's talk about the murder spree. We'll go victim by victim, and we'll flesh out kind of each character as we go. The murder spree took place in, it was about a 3-month period during mid-1997. It actually put him on the FBI's 10 most wanted list. during this. But it was a little too late. It was a little too late to catch him. So his first victim was Jeff Trail. Now, the way that this happened was he actually killed Jeff Trail in David Madsen's apartment on the show. And by accounts, he had come to town and he had stayed. He's like, hey, guys, we're going to have this big thing. But he could tell in the show anyway they played, it's like he could tell something was up, something was off. They didn't like him. They didn't want him there. He was there for – I remember you said something. I don't know if this will trigger – it almost seemed like he, because he only bought a one-way ticket. It was almost like he's going to go there, and this is either going to be the start of a new life, and this guy's going to propose to him, or he's going to fucking kill him. Like, it seemed like he was.
Yeah, and I mean, like I said, the tension there, I believe, was because Jeff said, and I think this was through family accounts, that Jeff did not like him, and he did not want to ever see him again. I really think that had to do with the postcard and what he had done, and that was just it as far as the means of that relationship. And so, yeah, Jeff didn't want to have anything to do with him. He didn't really want to hang out with him. I don't think he was that thrilled that he came into town to see David.
Right.
But yeah, he by all accounts, has David go down and get Jeff and bring him up to the apartment.
Well, so. And the night before that, if I'm not mistaken, when he came to town, Jeff told him, you can stay at my apartment. And he went and stayed with his sister. Because he didn't want to be around Andrew.
Yep.
And Andrew, didn't he take Jeff's gun?
Yes. So he did go stay at Jeff's apartment.
Right. So he took Jeff's gun from Jeff's apartment. And then that, I thought, was what got him over to David's that night, because he called him and said, I have your gun.
Well, yeah. He said, I took your gun or something like that. Or he calls David. I don't remember if it goes that way and says, you know, he took something from me. And he's like, what? He's like, my gun.
Yeah.
I don't remember which way, but yes, he does take his gun.
Something happens there. And yeah, they're staying. Then he goes over the next day and he goes to David's house.
Yeah.
And by all accounts, you're right. He sends David down to get Jeff, right?
And I think before that had even happened, in the show, when David goes down to get Jeff, you know, it kind of shows them walking up together and having a conversation. And in that exchange, David tells Jeff he proposed to me. So pretty sure Andrew had asked David to marry him and he... And so there was so much tension because it's...
That's a lot of tension. And that is in the show.
Yes.
Because that didn't come out at all in the real case. Yes.
Right.
So I don't know how much of
that is...
That's
a great twist, though. Because,
well,
I love
and
that.
It's interesting because you kind of go, look, we know that he went from here to here. And we know that this motivation is what got him from here to here. So you kind of have to go, well, I mean, this would make sense. Right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. the way that they play it, a lot of it does. So they get back up. David brings Jeff into the apartment. Now,
there's no David bringing Jeff in. It
really?
Happens without David, like, knowing about it. Like, David's gone, and then Andrew calls Jeff trying to get him to come over. But that's just the story.
So is David in the apartment? He is in the apartment.
He lives there. I mean, he's not in the apartment. He's walking his dog, according to, like, his friends. That's the time he walks his dog before the 10 o'clock news every night. This is just
In the show, David brought Jeff up to the apartment.
Okay.
And now, in the show, it was like he brings him in and he was waiting to ambush him.
Yeah.
However, there are accounts from neighbors who said they heard an argument.
Mm-hmm.
They heard voices yelling.
Get out.
They heard somebody yell, get out. And yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. And they heard shouting. So I believe that there was actually a what the fuck are you doing here?
Yeah.
I didn't want, you know what? Nobody likes you anyway. You fucking psycho.
And or that's a cover while you kill someone.
Right.
Right. But, right. Right. Right, though? Like, he's killing him. You get out! No!
I know how to build
a story. Get your hands off me! Yeah, just swinging away. But he killed him with a hammer. He hammered him straight to death, right, to the 27 face.
27 times.
And
then rolled him in a
rug. Psychotic rage.
That is...
That's why, because in the real story, they say, because he rolled him up in a rug after he killed him.
Yes.
And then David came back to the apartment, and they think David didn't know because he hid the rug, like, behind the couch or something.
Yeah.
And they got David to go somewhere else, and that's when they took off for good.
Right.
It's strange because they... there's like the lady that works at David's, I think he works in an architectural firm or something like that. And the, I do believe this is real, that she goes looking for him at David's apartment because she says that David would never miss work. He's never done that without calling or something like that. And so she's looking for him. When the police show up, they find Jeff in the carpet, but because they
think
don't
it's David.
Yes,
yeah,
they think
that's
it's David.
Totally true. That happened.
So,
and then when they initially too, and this was the other way it played out, and whether or not this played this way in real life, but on the show, once they discover it's not, they think that David was the killer.
Killed him.
Yeah,
they didn't even really know about Andrew yet.
Yeah, here's this guy that is, because he was a fucking nobody.
Yeah,
nobody
yeah.
knew him. He was this guy, and in the show, the friend who is the one that's there when they find the body in the apartment when David's still missing and it's Jeff's body, they said, "Well, who's this friend?" And she says something on the show like, "Yeah, he struck me as weird. He said his mom was like some Jewish princess, and like,
my goodness.
You know how he had been prattling on. I'm sure of who you know trying
but
to.
Yeah,
go
that was the lady, right? That worked
yeah,
at the firm.
True.
Yeah,
right. She's like, oh well, there was this guy coming to stay with him named Andrew.
Yeah,
so.
And that's kind of what sparks him. So,
it's interesting because in the show, it illustrates, you know, they have David in the apartment while Jeff is killed, and they have the whole thing where Andrew has David help him move Jeff's body or get it into the rug. So
so
it goes a different way.
Which it could have happened like
that. And they play it like
we don't know what.
And they play
happened.
It like him saying, "Look, it's in your apartment. They're not going to believe you. They're not going to believe that
Again,
you didn't have something to do with it."
Master manipulator.
Which seems, and it is in keeping with the character that they portray him to be, this, like you said, this manipulator. Because if he's there and he goes, "Hey, okay, help me move this. Okay, you just helped me move a body. So now you're going to think they're not going to believe you? Of course they're not going to think you had something to do with it. If I go down, you go down." So they played it like he put the fear into David Madsen.
And they did show him in the show attempting to call the police. You know, Andrew kind of convinces him and talks him down. Same thing, you know, they're never going to believe you. You're going to be part of this. But it does show the call connecting. So, I mean, that would be something they could probably prove or disprove.
Yeah, that was never talked about.
Yeah, if there was a call that came in, they could probably track.
And I think
like,
they would have talked about that for sure. Because they talked about the other 911 calls.
Yeah,
that's good storytelling, though. Ryan Murphy is a genius.
I think
love
you should go back
stuff.
And watch it, Melissa.
It's a good series. It's and now that it's done,
yeah, you don't have to wait week 2.
Because we would fucking wait, and I go, "God damn it, I didn't want to like this show."
Episode.
And now, just come on.
He's good. He's a good storyteller. I love it.
It is. It's good stuff. All right, so.
So then
now,
after the murder, David and Andrew are on the run.
But before they went on the run, and this is actually public accounts. There are people who saw them together walking his dog.
And David was crying when they saw him.
Right. So,
obviously, something bad is going on.
Yeah.
Well, at that point, after they see him, Jeff was dead. I mean, in the timeline, Jeff had been dead. So this guy, somehow, whatever, had...
He does know.
David,
I think that's when he told him.
And Cunanan had David so shook that he was out publicly. And that's another thing about
Cunanan. He also saw Jeff's gun.
Right. And that's another thing about Cunanan, though.
The gun the whole time. It drives me crazy.
Even after he killed Versace, this dude was walking around. He was driving around. He was ballsy. So he just killed a man with a hammer. This would have been his first murder. And now he's got the guy who... And just, let's go off the dog.
That's a psychopath mind. They know they did the right thing so much, they just don't even think about it.
Right.
They just know what they did was right. It's so weird.
Well.
It is weird.
He goes on the run. And a lot of this is speculation. Because nobody really knows what happened. They ended up by a lake. A place called Rush Lake, which is near...
Do they show this part in the show where he kills David?
Yes.
Oh, this part
it's
made
so
me sad.
It's really sad.
Well, they play it, you know...
It would
very,
make me really sad.
Very personal to David's story.
I thought David was the nice one.
He was.
In the story, I was like, no!
It's hard.
All the victims.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's hard watching a show where you know the ending,
so
you know?
It's so sad, yeah.
You know what's going to happen to all of them. It's tragic.
So they find the body by the river, and then...
Well, and it looked like he'd been...
Because they were looking for his car, right?
Right. He'd been shot in the back and the head, so it appeared that perhaps he had been running away or you know whatever, had been shot in the back and then had been shot down on the ground, almost execution style. Like, here's the last shot. So, I mean, nobody really knows what happened between those two in the time. There are people who still speculate that David was in on it because, you know, there's no other way to say he wasn't other than everything leading up to that doesn't seem like he did.
Yeah.
It's so weird. They didn't really get anything from that murder, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was all, well, when you look back, it was the only person who benefited from any of these killings was Andrew.
Yeah.
In Andrew's mind, in Andrew's storyline.
Exactly. Because, like, I mean, people kill all the time for, like, insurance or money or robbing. I mean, he kind of did with the architecture guy we haven't got to yet, but
sorry,
an alarm just went off.
One of the large gray aliens got out.
Get back to your cage, Zito.
Wait, what's his name?
Zito.
Oh,
he's from the kids' book I brought.
I'm gonna go out.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
I'm gonna go out and get.
I forgot he
get shot
name.
By a laser. Come back with just a couple
We're
fingers.
On lockdown now.
Schneider.
I'm gonna go get Schneider.
Schneider.
Oh no.
Yeah, that is the next step. So he leaves Minnesota, which is where these
in David's Jeep still, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm trying to remember because the car was what bothered me. Because I'm like, why can't they find him because of these cars?
Right.
Well, and I feel like at this point, in the story, if I'm Andrew, I've just committed two murders.
Mm-hmm.
I've got nothing.
Of men who loved you,
right?
Jerk.
I've got nothing. I've got nothing. No money. This car is going to be looked for. So I think at this point he was like, who do I know that I can get to that can maybe I can get something from and get, I don't know, flee,
no, I
run,
think,
whatever.
I think you're right, totally.
And that's what led him to a man named Lee Miglin, who some people speculate might have been...
A John.
Yeah, right?
during Andrew's prostitution days.
Yeah, Lee Miglin.
He was big with architecture in Chicago.
Yes. I mean, this guy was
giant.
A bigwig. He had a wife. What was her name?
Marilyn, I believe.
Marilyn Miglin.
Mm-hmm, I think so.
And she was like a QVC royalty. Like a
perfume lady.
Perfume lady. Built an empire.
She did like the pheromone perfume or something. It was like a specialty one.
Hmm. She did well on her own. Both of these people were very successful.
Big power couple.
And long after Lee's death, I mean, she never believed he was involved with Andrew Cunanan. She never could come to terms with the idea of her husband being gay, or having these affairs or what have you. It's interesting how they play it in the show. Judith Light, from Who's
really?
The Boss, plays
really?
Marilyn Miglin.
Oh, I gotta watch this.
Yeah.
She's in all the Lifetime movies.
she's great. She. And so, you know, there's a lot that's kind of played very interestingly because, I mean, again, we don't know how the scene with
how it actually went down.
All they have is the police photos. All they know is what happened to Lee. All they know is I don't know what was left behind, as with any of these murders, right? So I don't know. I think that this is the point in the story where Andrew Cunanan had a decision to make. He was either going to stop and I'm done with the personal vendetta, the love triangle's done, or he was going to continue on and keep going until he killed everything that meant something or stood for something in his life.
I just don't see the killing. Like, why does he have to kill? I don't get it.
I mean, I think when we're breaching the conversation about Lee Miglin, I think it's a matter of survival at this point. Like you said, he needs money and he needs clothing, he needs and a new car. He switches, you know, he trades out David's Jeep for Lee Miglin's vehicle. And I think it was a matter of survival. And he saw what he wanted and Lee was in his way and took it.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to take just a quick break here. And then we are going to come back. We're going to tell you what happened to Lee as well as Andrew's other victims, and then talk about the murder that made all of this newsworthy. So we'll be right back.
The truth is we know what happened at point A and point B. We don't know what was said in those rooms, what was said in the car, and we'll never know. And I think what we're trying to convey in our show is less an expose of what really happened, because we could never deign to say that we know the truth. We'll never know. But what we can do is tell the narrative arc of what had to have happened emotionally, psychologically, for point A and point B to be connected. And that's what interests me. We'll never know. And I think the Versaces are more concerned with the way their family's being portrayed. And I think we portray them with a great deal of respect and love.
All right, welcome back. So when we left off, Andrew Cunanan had made his way to Chicago, as you had pointed out, for necessity, really.
I would think.
He needed some things. He needed some supplies. He needed a new car. Do you believe that he went to Chicago knowing or premeditating that he was going to kill Lee Miglin? Or was he just going to take what he could? Do you think at this point, I'm a killer, I'm going to take what I can, I'm going to leave nobody, leave no witnesses, like you say?
I think he was doing it for survival, but I think he was looking for sugar daddy, like, permanent.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was looking for, like, give me somewhere to live, give me somewhere to hide out, you know.
Shelter.
Like, I totally think he was like, I'm going to be with you, or I'm going to tell your wife about us, or something.
Ooh.
Like, I think there was a reason for him to go there, not to kill him, but to try and get, like...
Manipulation, for sure.
Yeah, just to try and build a life, because he had nothing, and he was on the run from the cops, and it was Chicago, mm-hmm. whole new city, which we know the cops couldn't track him anyway.
Yeah.
But if he says no, then, hey, look, I have no problem.
If he says no, I'll kill him. I think that was the mentality. Like, I think he's going to give me what I deserve, and if he won't, I'm going to kill him.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, he could have even told Lee about the murders. He could have even confessed, you know, like... in an attempt of self-preservation, like, well, if I tell you about it, you know, and you house me here, or you help me, like, you know about it now. What are you going to do? And he could have said, I don't want anything to do with this.
Yeah, get out.
I will say the only thing that kind of steers my thoughts of how things went down is the manner in which Lee Miglin was found. It doesn't so much seem...
Struggly?
Yeah.
It
seems like he was... fine with how the visit was going, I guess you could say.
Let's clarify how Lee Miglin was found.
This is
sad. Because Lee Miglin was a 72-year-old man. He was not a young dude. He was an older man, for sure. He was found with duct tape wrapped around his hands and feet and wrapped around his head.
Entirely.
Yes.
Like a mummy.
Kind of like if you're doing a plaster cast and you leave the nose so they can breathe. This is kind of how he was found. Some people believe, like you're saying, inferring, that it may have been some sort of S&M, bondage-y thing.
Yeah.
Right, don't wrap fucking duct tape around my hair.
Duct tape
eyebrows. Off the hair?
I mean, like, yeah.
But once he was wrapped in duct tape and was unable to move, I don't want to read this, but he was stabbed over 20 times.
Jesus.
With a screwdriver. And then
he was tortured.
He was found in his garage.
Yeah,
and then, so I think it seems like Andrew was using whatever was available in the room.
Oh.
I think Andrew was perhaps trying to dismember the body and realized it was going to be hard because Lee's neck had been sawed open with a hacksaw. So I wonder if he was trying to remove the head and then realized, fuck this, I'll just leave him. So it was a horrible scene. I can only imagine. In the show, they don't show either one of these things. In the show, I can't remember what he does first.
I think they just show him like stabbing him, but I know that like he uses a cement bag.
Yeah, he drops a cement bag
to, like,
on his
crush
chest.
Crush his chest. I mean, that's horrifying in and of itself, but... I didn't know he had tried to saw his head off, which, I mean, like you're saying, if it's dismemberment, that would make sense. Because otherwise, why would he do that?
I was going to say, everything he did was so excessive.
Also, and starting with the head? Man, that's a...
I mean, he stabs this guy 20-plus times. He stabs Jeff Trail, how many did you
27.
Say? 27 times.
Oh my gosh.
With the hammer, he beats him.
I mean, let's be fair. You know,
he had problems.
Five times is the job's done. 10 times you're angry. 27 times,
Jesus.
That's a place.
Yeah.
That's a different place. So this guy definitely went over the top. But yeah, I can only assume that maybe he was going to dismember the body and realize this is not fucking easy to saw through.
I wouldn't
body.
Start with the head. I mean, I'd like test the toe or something.
Well, but
you see, like, how my dismembering.
But you're probably look when you're dismembering a body, you'd probably now
Let's
look.
See
you're
how
not
going to
start
is.
At a leg. So if you're going to dismember a body into six pieces, right, as you would through a killer, a torso, two arms, two legs, and a head, right? That's how most dismembered bodies are found by cops.
Ugh.
So you probably wouldn't start with an arm because that's awkward, and you probably wouldn't start with the leg because that's thick. I would assume you would start with the head. And then it's not.
But we know.
Of all of
the
sawing. We
all know that Andrew is afraid of hard work anyway, and he's not going to finish it, because otherwise he would actually get a job and build a life for himself instead
he's
of
like,
lie.
Fuck this.
Yes.
This is hard.
He's a quitter, is what you're saying.
I need a gun.
God.
Knives are too much work.
Well, and he does have a gun. That's the crazy thing is he still
well, I
has
think this
just
is vendetta.
Done.
That's why I think he was going to Lee to like keep him because he really wanted to be like a kept man. And so I think it was just passion and anger that he was getting rejected because Lee wouldn't take care of him. And that's why Lee got the worst of it. Out of all his victims, Lee got the worst of it.
After David said no, Kanan was like, hey, Lee, you up?
What's up?
What's up, man?
3 a.m. text. Just got home. What's up? That's exactly what happened, I'm sure. Oh, wait. There wasn't text messaging.
No.
It was the 90s.
Yeah. But honestly, though, he then takes Lee's car. And
the Lexus.
Heads out. Now, from all accounts, and in the show they play it this way, is that he's in Lee's car when he hears a radio telling him that police are tracking him because of the phone in the car.
That's accurate. Yeah. That
is real? That's
that
real
is
shit?
Actually accurate because he took Lee's black Lexus that had a cell phone in it and they could track it because of the cell phone. And this is back in the 90s, so it wasn't like as advanced as like ping towers and stuff now, but he heard that on the radio. I mean, it doesn't come out and say it, but I'm sure he did because the media was putting it out there that we're tracking him through the cell phone in the car. So he breaks the cell phone. He does a bunch of other damage to the car, but he doesn't realize the cell phone connection is in the trunk, which he doesn't go into it. But anyway, still, they didn't catch him, even though he didn't realize that. So he just drives to wherever he can because he knows he's got to get a new car. And that leads him to New Jersey. I don't even know why he's driving there.
Pennsville, New Jersey, of all places.
Pennsville, New Jersey.
Yeah,
and this victim makes me really sad.
Oh, it's just so senseless. They all are.
Oh,
but
they're all awful.
The fourth murder. Now, all of the murders in his story play into Andrew's narrative. This one plays into his narrative of being completely selfish.
And survival again.
While not having anything to do with anything else. And it's like you're saying, it sucks. He found I don't know how he ended up at a place called Finns Point National Cemetery, but he did, and he found the caretaker who lived there in his home. He had a truck, and I guess he, like you said, needed another car, but of all the places, of all the people, and the accounts of this say that this man was home.
Reading a Bible, I believe.
Or listening to Christian music.
Yeah,
and
what's,
I mean, it's
one or the other, either way.
He was also feeding
a
baby
really
cat.
He was a really good dude. Him and his wife like adopted a baby.
Right.
And like,
I mean,
was born with fetal alcohol syndrome.
Aww.
And he was 12. That was their son. He was 12 at the time this happened.
Aww.
So sad.
Well, he pulls up and he could have just taken this guy's car and left. But I think at this point he realizes that that's going to mean somebody's going to tell and somebody's going to track him and. So he killed this guy. He shot him for no reason other than self-preservation.
So awful. William Reese, wasn't that his name? Or was it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. William Reese. And it was sad. And I mean, there's nothing more to that other than this guy was in the wrong place at the wrong time when the wrong guy came by. So, now the manhunt at this point, because they figured out this murder, they were tracking him or what have you. They found the murder, or they found William Reese, and the manhunt started focusing on finding Reese's truck.
Yeah, because the black Lexus was left behind.
Right.
So they knew it was him. So then he took off in the red truck.
In the red truck, right.
But then he switched license plates in South Carolina.
Yep.
Totally threw the cops off. Like, are you kidding me?
It's a red fucking truck. I don't know. He gets down to Florida, parks the car, and then ends up basically, for all intents and purposes, hiding in plain sight.
Yep, exactly. Which was very smart of him to do.
He spent 2 months between the Reese murder and the Versace murder, 2 months walking around Miami Beach in plain fucking sight.
I think a lot of the reason for this, from what I was watching, is they were looking for him in New York. And they thought he was targeting homosexuals and stuff, so they were putting up flyers and stuff.
Yeah.
But they, since he took the car in New Jersey, they were looking, like, you know,
east,
north.
Yeah,
yeah,
east
they
coast,
were not
northeast.
Thinking he was going to Miami Beach.
Right.
Which he did. He ends up in Miami Beach. And so brash that he even used his own name to pawn stolen coins
from
Lee Miglin.
Yep. Yeah.
He wrote his name and address and I'm Andrew Cunanan and here's where I'm staying. Here I'm trading in the coins of the guy that I just murdered.
Yep. He wrote where he was staying, which was like this dumpy motel in Miami Beach. And the thing that bothers me about that is the pawn shop had to report it.
Yep.
And so they gave it to the local police and it was sitting on their desk and nobody looked at it. And that was 5 days before Versace was murdered.
They
could have found him.
Yeah, and they even...
The clue was on the cop's
desk.
It's
not even the clue. It's the fucking... Here's where I am.
Yeah.
Here's
he's
my
in
fucking
Miami Beach.
Cunanan? Isn't
at
this the guy?
At this crappy motel.
Fuck.
Yeah. They even illustrate something within the show about... within the police office. And is that the right word? Police station? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. That they had a whole bunch of wanted flyers of his face, and they kind of insinuate that they didn't get those flyers up and plaster it all over down there.
They didn't, because they thought he was somewhere else.
Right.
You know, and like, it's kind of one of those things of like the power we have now of like the internet and everything. You know, I feel like we're so much more connected. I mean, that was back in the 90s, which technology wasn't that bad, but still, it's nowhere near
social
what
media
it was
now. Nothing like
he
it is.
He was one of the first criminals on the FBI most wanted list that was put on the internet, though, at the time. He was one of the first ones. And he was put on America's Most Wanted, the TV show, and somebody recognized him
really?
Miami.
Well, and they showed in the show that he was driving around and he was trying to avoid police checkpoints in a stolen car. And stopped, and a man had been like, "Hey, what are you doing?" You know.
Yeah, in a sub, like a sub shop or something. He came in and he called the cops, and they're like, "Take your time with this order," to try and like stall so they could get there.
I think the guy though that was after the Versace murder.
Yeah, it was
because
oh, that's right, that's right.
And you're you know, right. He says, he kind of shows him a map and is like, "Hey, can you show me another way?" And he's like, "No, there's no back roads out of here. There's police checkpoints all over the island. They're looking for the guy who killed
that's
Versace."
Right,
so.
That's right. Well, and so, and that's what he did, was that he not only hid in plain sight, but he murdered in plain sight. Of all of the murders, right? Everything else was secretive, it was behind doors, him, whatever. I mean, obviously, as most murders are. And then he's, I guess, walking around. I don't know if he was targeting, if he had, they kind of imply that he may have been watching Versace learning.
I'm sure he was.
Because they talk about Johnny Versace. Who, like you said, was an absolute genius and an absolute ray of light. They called him the mayor of South Beach because he would get up every morning and just walk around and say hi to people and shake hands and get his coffee and get his paper. And he just loved the city and loved the town and loved all the places and would, you know, he was not secretive about where he lived or what he did or his daily routine. So there is ideas and insinuations that Andrew... had followed him and had studied him, but
And more than just then, I mean, more like all of his life, it kind of showed that he had an interest in Versace throughout.
Yeah, when he lived in San Diego, he claims to have met him.
They insinuate that, yeah, that he meets him at a club and then ends up talking to him at an opera or something.
Yeah.
And like you said, here's the man who represents the pinnacle of what he thinks he can be, right? And Versace's walking back from getting his morning paper. Walks up to his gate, and Andrew Cunanan pulls out a gun, and in broad daylight, right in the morning sun, walks up behind Johnny Versace, shoots him once in the side of the face, and then another time in the head, and then runs away. People saw this murder. Mm-hmm. People were like, "No, somebody just walked up and shot Versace in the face."
And then just calmly walked away quickly.
Yeah, he just kind of, he didn't sprint. You're right.
Yeah,
he just kind of
scurried.
And some people actually tried to pursue him. Mm-hmm. They ran after him.
There were witnesses.
In the show, they show that a guy almost caught up with him, and then Cunanan pulls the gun on him. But I think people were just not able to catch him. He gets in the truck and he gets away. And Reese's stolen truck was found soon after, as well as Cunanan's clothes. An alternate passport and newspaper clippings of Cunanan's murders were found in a parking garage. So he had been following himself.
Yeah.
Even up to
as then. He would.
As he would.
Yeah, narcissist. Of course he did.
At that point, he really doesn't have many alternatives. And this is where most people pick up. See, a lot of people don't understand all of the stuff that went on. Most of this story,
holy crappy detective work. Mm-hmm.
All of the story revolves around the man who shot Versace. And that's interesting because they call it the murder of Johnny Versace. But really, that was the culmination of the life of Andrew Cunanan and everything that he tried to erase and tried to make himself into. And it's funny because once he kills Versace, the story kind of ends. He kills Versace and spends 8 days hiding from police. Not necessarily. I mean, like we said, he was out driving around. He was doing stuff. Yeah. People had spotted him. But he eventually found a houseboat or a beach house or something that was...
It's like a real house that floats.
But it's also a connected boat.
I don't know. But like it doesn't leave the dock, though.
No.
Like it's attached to the land.
You live
I don't
on
know
the
how
water.
To, like it doesn't you know go abroad. I don't know what the word is.
They call it a houseboat.
Yeah,
but he
it's a floating house that's attached to the land.
Right.
It's weird.
He ended up breaking into this place and living there. In the show, they show how he went from the first couple days living in this house and eating the food to, by day eight, like eating dog food and starving and just
good.
Is that part true where he just ate dog food? Does anybody know if that's real?
Did they find I don't know if he ate dog food or not. But I mean, they talk about how there was no food left in the house. So they think he was just hiding out and like eating everything he could.
They may have found a couple things of dog food that were empty because, quite frankly, I mean, they came back to that a couple times. Seems like an interesting thing to hit, you know, if they hadn't found it. But, I mean, they show how far he fell. Here's this guy who literally, if he would have just straightened up and flown right, he was a smart enough guy that he might have done well for himself. But because he decided to lie about his life the entire time, he ends up eating dog food while hiding from the police, I mean, literally as low as you can get.
Yep.
A couple days later, the caretaker of this houseboat is asked to check on it or is walking by. I mean, in the show, they play it as he was called to check on it. Some reports say that he was just walking by and had noticed that things were amiss.
All the lights were on.
Right.
That's why he went.
What is this? He gets there, notices it's been broken into. This guy, the caretaker, he's packing. So he goes in with a gun and he hears a shot. Whether that was...
That was totally TV fun.
So
he just came and knocked on the door, but then Andrew shot at him.
Right.
And they was like, whoa, okay, getting the cops.
So yeah, some people, either he shot at him, fired a shot at him, or some people, I think that they proved that wasn't the shot. He didn't kill himself right then. But police had surrounded the place. So much so in the show, he was watching the standoff and watching this whole thing. He's finally made it to TV, right? How poetic. But they surrounded this place. And I remember watching that. I remember watching that standoff. And they're like, are they going to get this guy?
Mm-hmm.
And when he killed himself, it was like, fuck
such
you.
Such a letdown, I know.
Man, fuck you. This guy never said anything. Like, yeah. There was never a clear motive.
Yeah, there was never a motive.
They never went in and said...
That's more the homophobia, though, because I remember at the time they were saying he had HIV and he was tracking down people who gave him HIV. Which was not true. And it was checked. He didn't have it. But that was the homophobic news. Right. You know what I mean? Like, all these men are gay. What would they have in common?
Right. And they even insinuated, because, I mean, there was rumors that Johnny Versace had gotten sick for a while and that it was that was HIV until he got on top of it. But his family maintains that that was
ear cancer.
God.
And they actually play it very...
It could go either way on the show.
Yeah.
It's like you decide.
He could either have
We're not going to tell you one
ear cancer or hearing aids. They don't. It's one or the other.
Hearing aids?
Yeah, because it was in his ear.
Yeah, I get it.
It wasn't a good joke. We'll probably get it. I'm sorry.
No, we're leaving it.
I'd like to apologize.
You're going to stick with
wah,
it.
Wah.
Yeah.
I liked it. It was funny.
You don't have to like it. It's fine. I'm just going to.
You have aids? I have hearing aids. Waka, waka, waka.
Do the dance.
There it is. But that part was untrue.
Yes, that was totally untrue. That was completely news sensationalism.
And Andrew, despite all his narcissism, he left no note, no manifesto. He barely had a few personal belongings at that time.
I thought it was weird he left no note, but then I realized he was so in his mind with his lies. Everything that happened was like in his mind. So I think he might have been in a relationship with Versace in his mind. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that was everything he wanted. Versace represented like everything he wanted and he just couldn't get there. And so I think he built up this whole like being with him kind of fantasy, like a stalker would, you know? And then he was stalking him and then he figured out his routine. So he knew when he'd come back home from getting the paper and stuff. And like, it's so scary. I'm sure Versace had no idea at all.
Right. I think that takes... I mean, we can say that Andrew was super crazy, which he was, but he was also very intelligent. I mean,
Those are the scariest kinds of crazy people, right, though, because they can think things through, like, on a different level.
And I think he realized... I really think there was both sides to Andrew that could be plausible. And it may be even, like, a matter of split personality where you have this side of you that knows your whole life is a lie and then you have the other half that's telling you it's true. And I think with his suicide, because it's just so bland, I don't even know what the other word to use for that would be, but I just think it could also be a matter of Andrew realizing there was just no glory behind the story. He just was, his life was a lie. He had nothing to, I mean, he really, even if he wrote a manifesto, it would all be a lie. It would be bullshit. And I think he knows that. And I just think he took himself out unceremoniously, you know, just like his life truly was, you know?
Wow.
I don't know. That's my opinion on that part, but.
That sucks. I mean, it sucks that anybody ever has to feel that way. And I think, you know, there are a lot of stories from that time period where people either were killed or became something because of what they had to hide. You know, so for all intents and purposes, it is great that people feel more free to be open about who they are in today's world. But all of the homophobia and everything aside, Andrew Cunanan was a broken individual who was, I mean, again, he was just, you took a kid who had these tendencies and you polished them till they were razor sharp.
Yep, making a murderer.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. His life could have gone either way. I don't know. Because in this one, there's really not a whodunit or what do we think happened? Because we know what happened.
We know.
But why do you, I mean, let's, in kind of to wrap this up, what do you take away from Andrew? Like, why is it that you truly believe all of this? You know, what's your feeling looking back over it?
For me, there seems to be a consistent pattern of all of the victims were just simply in his way of what he wanted. You know, whether Jeff was in the way of him being with David. Lee was in the way of money in a car. The caretaker of the cemetery was just in his way of a vehicle. And I think Versace, in the end, was in his way of Andrew becoming who he wished he could be, competitively speaking. If he can take out the person that he believes is on top, maybe he thinks he can take that position. And I mean, or he was truly smart enough and crazy enough to believe that I can be better than Versace if I can kill him. You know, like, there's really no much more control than taking someone's life from them. That's like, that's a huge matter of a power trip, like, to the extreme.
Right.
I don't know. That's, I just think he was, I mean, obviously crazy, but just power tripping and killing people who were in his way of anything he wanted, whether it was big or small.
Wow. Melissa?
I just think he was so entitled. He just, like, was mad at people who just wouldn't give him the things he deserved, which, again, it's like they were in his way. Mm-hmm. But then he'd kill him, which, you're right, is a major control issue of taking it away. And I just think he created so many lies. He believed them himself and then acted on them. But yeah. I don't know. He's a sick, sick individual. And I just wish the cops could have caught him sooner.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Well, you know, and I
like
think,
across five states. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, those are the real, I mean, yes. When we look at this story, I think that it is fascinating that in the wake of this story, it became, you know, about Versace being murdered. But to be fair, this story of Andrew Cunanan, it could have been anybody at the end of that rainbow. It could have been anybody that he had fixated that meant fame, that meant fortune, that meant accomplishment. And the people, Lee Miglin, William Reese, Jeff Trail, David Madsen, these people got lost in the shuffle of this story, ultimately, especially in the beginning. They didn't have a giant funeral that was attended by Princess Di and Elton John and was televised. They were people who were killed just as horribly, if not more horribly, by this same individual. And I do like that show came along and dedicated so much of its time to these characters, real or not, whether it was fictional, whether it was embellished a little bit. I do like that these people and their story got told. And that, yeah, it really did play Andrew Cunanan as not just the man who took away a great mind like Versace, but a sick individual who ruined a lot of lives. And, you know, that's exactly what he was. Just a fucking psychopathic piece of shit.
It's crazy to think that all of those people are connected to each other, you know, because of Andrew. And it's really weird to think that he used Jeff's gun to kill Versace. You know, like, in
he
the
had
end,
the
like,
gun the whole time.
The whole time. It was Jeff's gun. Like, if Jeff Trell would have known, like, my gun will, you know, one day end up killing Versace, it's just, it's crazy. It's
Why
really
can't
crazy
we put
to
GPS
see.
Tracking devices in guns? That's, and we'll always track the guns.
A really, really good idea,
and
Melissa.
And we can know where the guns are.
All right, we're not going to do this podcast anymore. We're going to go home and invent GPS trackers for guns. So,
genius.
Yeah.
This is happening.
Yeah. That was your idea. You get all the credit for that.
Well.
I'm doing my dance.
You know, but I'm glad you can still dance at the end of this episode.
I'm yeah.
We didn't, it didn't just pound all the rhythm out of you with the nonstop murder and sadness.
No.
Awful.
It was awful. And you know.
You know what I love, though, is that Versace is still going, that Donatella stepped up, his sister, and took it over, and it's still a fantastic empire. Yes. I think that's amazing, so.
Yeah,
I mean,
at least that's a positive thing.
I think that's picking up out of the ashes. I mean, the Versace name means as much today, if not more so, than it did back then. And to see that, because they did also play that in the show, that this was Johnny's company. Donatello was very much underneath him.
Different visions for sure. But
so, yeah.
He's probably rolling in his grave right now, though, because I'm wearing my moccasins out there right now.
No, he'd be like, you know what? You're beautiful. Your moccasins, they shape your feet.
No.
And they accent the way that you walk. You're a beautiful woman, and the moccasins accentuate that beauty.
No, I just didn't want to get my docks dirty, so it was raining, and so I put my moccasins on.
It's a moccasin. For those of you who would like to see Danny's moccasins, head on over to our social media, which you should be following anyway. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can find Area 52 on all of them, as well as going to UtahPodcastNetwork.com. And as always, if you wouldn't mind taking time to just head over to the iTunes store or whatever your podcast app and just writing a little review, rating us 5 stars and saying, hey, you guys are doing a good job. We'd appreciate it. But that's going to do it for us. I thought this was a really good episode. I thought that it's a tragic story, but I feel like we told it okay.
I think so.
Yeah.
We're not as good as
Ryan
FX
Murphy, of course.
Yeah, but whatever. But it was great.
He
so,
had a celebrity cast.
If you didn't watch the Death of Johnny Versace, it's on demand. Go check that out. There's also a lot of Datelines and documentaries about the killing of Johnny Versace and Andrew Cunanan. But I did think that the show did stretch out and flesh out some of these characters who, like you said, don't get the time in the 48 hours documentary and the Dateline NBC. So,
What about the dove? I like that conspiracy about
the pigeon.
They found
bullet fragments in a dove laying next to Johnny's body who matched the gun, so they were able to prove it. And I think that's poetic that this man died next to this white dove on this beautiful
that's
steps.
Beautiful,
and I mean, it was
really a pigeon.
It was
really a pigeon, and that's why people thought it was a mafia hit.
That's what I was going to say. There was conspiracy.
Mafia, leave a dead bird, but it was. Yeah, it really got a ricochet.
Yeah, especially with his Italian background. They thought
I would have made it a dove.
Listen, here's what you don't do. You didn't make a suit for the Don, all right? We're going to leave this pigeon next to your body. Let's let you know that we did not approve of your tailoring.
And also, Versace's house is gorgeous, but the setup is kind of heinous with the gate.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like you have to stand unprotected to take the time to unlock your gate with a key to safely get inside your courtyard, which... Kind of, I feel like I'd have like an underground tunnel that I slipped through and came up through an elevator or something.
Batman style.
Yeah, something like it just seems like.
That shows you, though, his trusting nature.
Yes, which is so tragic.
Yeah.
Darn it.
The whole story was. But go check it out. Go look into it for yourself. There's a lot of details, obviously, that we can't cover everything in the podcast. So go check it out. Go check out the pictures. Go check out all the information that's online. But thank you for listening to us tell this tale. We really appreciate it. On behalf of Danny and Melissa, our producer Sasha, and everybody here at the Area 52 recording facilities, we just want to thank you for your time. And hey, we'll see you next time. Versace on the-